This week's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Heavy Play. If you're interested in getting some innovative curved sleeves, or even trying out their Equip Mag system that connects your playmat, deck box, and dice box together with high-quality magnets, check out HeavyPlay.com. Use the code DARKDEPTHS10 for 10% off your order. Again, thank you to our friends over at HeavyPlay.com. Enjoy the show. Thank you to our friends over at Magnolia Gaming, a leading supplier for all things TCG. If you're looking for a place to pick up cards for your next big event, or maybe you just want to do a draft with the new set with your best friends, use MagnoliaGames.com to pick up everything you need from Magic the Gathering, Flesh and Blood, Lorcana, and more. They have an excellent buy list to help you trade those extra modern cards for your first dual land, or maybe that old Angus McKenzie commander deck collecting dust can be traded in for the last cards you need for your collection. And be on the lookout for Magnolia Games at your next large regional event. Use our affiliate code to help support the Dark Depths podcast. Again, go to MagnoliaGames.com and tell them the Dark Depths podcast sent you. All right, enjoy the show. Podcast, or go to place for the modern legacy format. I'm one of your hosts, Billy Mitchell, and with me, as always, the Streetwise Lookout himself, Michael Matson. How are you?
I'm excited to be back after, I don't know, however many episodes I was gone. I was kind of back 2 weeks ago, but then there were technical difficulties.
Yeah, which unfortunate, but it definitely worked out. And we had a good time, which got lost to the ages, which it happens. And last week, obviously, we had some last-minute things come up, and we had Alex fill in, which was a great. I mean, he did a really great job the last couple of weeks. So, again, just shout-out to Alex. But we also have some, I guess, exciting things coming up. I mean, I'm glad you're back, obviously. It's good to see... be able to see you. I know I saw you this weekend at SCG Philly, which we're going to get into a ton. But before we do get into that, I do want to shout out our sponsors. We got Heavy Play. Heavy Play continues to be a leader in protecting your cardboard and your decks and your dice even. If you are interested in checking them out in person, they are going to be at a couple different locations that you can see. They're going to be at PAX East in Boston, March 21st to 24th. They're going to be at SCGCon Atlanta, April 12th to 14th, as well as Command Fest Dallas, presented by Cool Stuff Inc., April 19th to 21st. And then if you're interested, if you're going to be upset that you're in Dallas instead of San Francisco, don't worry. They'll be in San Francisco there also. That one's presented by Laughing Dragon. Also, April 19th to 21st. Yep, two weekends, same weekend, two different spots. Good for them. I'm really excited. If you're going to be at any of the events, definitely check them out. And, of course, if you want to get a discount on your stuff, use DARKDEPTHS10 at checkout and get that. And, of course, we want to shout out our other sponsor, Magnolia Gaming, who continues to be a lovely supporter of our show. Check out their stuff and use our affiliate code to get to support us, help us out. But help us as you help yourself.
Fun fact, I bought a Mox Diamond from Magnolia Gaming 2 weeks ago. Great price, Okay. Great service. I was happy every step of the way. Not super happy when the money left, my account. But
yeah.
It could have been a lot more money that left my account. So overall, A+ experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. Good. It's good to hear. Testimonial from one of your own. And speaking of one of our own, we actually had a really great time. We had a local SCG, which is always amazing to have. But not only that, but we actually had a very good friend actually do very, very well in the event as well. Let's introduce to the show the Grand Unifier himself, Patrick Owens. How are you, Pat?
Hi, good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for coming on. It's really funny. We obviously were all in a group chat together, and I think you had mentioned, you can invite me on if you want. I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know why I didn't think about that. Like, we were hanging out at the venue most of the day, and it never crossed my mind to be like, oh, you should come on the show. So I'm glad you suggested it. I guess I don't even know if you want to introduce yourself or if you want Mapson to introduce you, because I know you guys go way back.
So I know you guys because I used to teach in the same district as Mapson's wife. And then, so we were hanging out and just, I know someone else who plays Magic. And then, you know, that's how looped in with all of you guys. And I've been going to events and doing things as often as I can for, is it been almost 10 years now? Maybe? Okay. Time flies.
I was thinking about how long I've been playing Magic the other day, and I got, like, depressed. I was like, I've been doing this for so long. I'm like, why don't I have more results? Why haven't I found anything better to do with my life? Just so many questions, wondering how much money I spent on this game. Just...
That's a question we don't need answered for any of us.
Never do the math. Not worth it. Yeah, I'm at the 23-year mark, 23, 24, and it's, yep.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. But, it obviously, it worked out for you. I know this isn't your first, like, big, event victory. I know you have, you know, had a high placing on Turtle Weekend as well.
Yeah, so I top eighted Eternal Weekend in, is that 2019? Yeah, 2019, with like Blue-Red Delver, so I've been playing the deck a while, because I played Grixis this past weekend, but, you know, no Monastery Swift Spears for me today.
I always do love Swift Spear, that's always a favorite of mine.
Yeah, well, this year's Eternal Weekend, I wasn't sure exactly which version I wanted to go with, and I purposely left my Swift Spears and Chain Lightnings home so I wouldn't get too tempted.
Smart move.
So, what made you land on Grixis for this event, then?
So, I've been playing various flavors of Delver the whole time I've been playing Legacy. Like, the first weekly event I did was, almost a decade ago at this point, with the... It was the last week that Dig Through Time was legal. Not sure why I wasn't playing that card, but... So, Delver is just what I've been most familiar with. Specifically more of the, like, aggressive Swift Spear. Like, I've played Swift Spear, Goblin Guide, main deck Price of Progress. Even when those are not the best things to be doing. And recently I've played some of the blue-black shadow lists and have been enjoying that. So just anything on that tempo range. But then it's just always nice coming back to Delver of having that Lightning Bolt and Pyroblast and Dragon's Rage Channeler. So that led me there over Shadow. And then Grixis, I was going back and forth even the night before on Grixis or the blue-red with the little bit of green for Questing Druid, and just remembering some of the matchups I played with different things of where I really want Bowmaster to answer Bowmaster. And so that's how I settled on Grixis.
Yeah, I've been like really looking at the teamer deck because it, in theory, it seems like it should be just as equipped, right? Like you have a really solid creature package, very similar to the Grixis version. I really do like Questing Druid. Some of the things you get to do with that, it stacks up pretty quickly. And I think having access to like pick your poison in the sideboard is a huge get. But like I still feel like you just lose so much by not playing black in the Delver build right now.
Yeah, I mean, black gets you Bowmasters, but I also really enjoyed Molten Collapse this weekend. Just, it didn't come up in every one of my rounds, because I'm only on one. I decided to play a Chain Lightning instead of the second that a lot of the stock lists have. But in the semifinals, just getting to kill Murktide or Triumph of St. Catherine was huge, and I know like the blue red little bit of green lists have some Brazen Borrowers, but you know, just being able to just permanently answer it, well, not permanently for Triumph of St. Catherine, but
yeah,
long enough is nice.
I know we have seen some of the, like, Shadow has gone, stock has gone down significantly, but we have seen a lot of the scam list, if you want to call it scam or you want to call it Reanimator, popping up all over, I mean, honestly, every format. I guess we're going to get to that later, but especially in Legacy, we saw a lot of the, I think, four lists in the top eight of the Legacy 5K were some blue-black scam derivative, at the very least. Was that a deck that was on your radar, or is that just not something you were interested in?
It's something where I don't get to play as much as I might like to. You understand, having young kids as well. Yeah. But so I wanted to just go with the more Delver-based, or even the Shadow lists with, not Delver, but Stalactite Stalker, and just a more tempo game plan. Not that the scam lists don't have that, but the Delver or Shadow is just more in the realm of what I'm used to. So just want to go with those old muscles with it.
Yeah, I think that's a very good call.
Yeah, so Billy mentioning the Rescaminator deck just like demolishing this event. Just want to throw a quick shout out to Brian Koval for, you know, crushing yet another event. He was on that deck.
I think this is like our third Brian Koval shout out of the, like, in a row. We need to calm down. So, you know what? I'm also going to shout out Brian Cook. Got him. Take that.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, spread out the love.
I wasn't there the past 6 weeks, so I have not shouted out Koval. But also, it's not our fault if he just keeps winning.
That's true. Something else I kind of noticed just about your deck in general. I obviously like the Molten Collapse. I like the Chain Lightning. That split, I think, makes a lot of sense. The other card that, you know, kind of caught me off guard, and actually, you know, speaking of those blue-black scam lists, the Surveillance has been making a really huge appearance in the Legacy format, and we're seeing them in Modern as well. They seem to be very powerful cards that have kind of changed the texture of, you know, what some decks are trying to do on turn one. You're playing one copy of Thundering Falls, which in Delver in particular is not a deck I'm used to wanting to take turn one off. So how did the Thundering Falls play for you over the weekend?
There was exactly one game where I was on the draw and my only land was Thundering Falls that I had to mulligan for. The rest of the day, it was so, so good. I mean, I'm playing it as the 19th land. So the 8 fetches, 4 wastes, 3 of Seasoned Vaux. And I just like having the 19th land in Delver sometimes to just avoid getting completely wasted out in some of the matchups that are about that. And then the Thundering Falls itself just allowed some of those later game lands to have a lot of value. It helped flip some Delvers sometimes. It was just very good all day, especially in my quarterfinals, where I got to use it to set up some counterbalance triggers. And then I played against, let's see, how many of my opponents played with that? 1, 2, 3, like four or five of my opponents had at least one, and it was good from, it looked good in their situations as well, especially in the blue-black one in Doomsday.
Yeah, that one is, I actually got by that, I guess, yesterday. All the days are blurring together at this point. Being able to just, like, you know, get rid of the top card of your library and, you know, dig one card further during a pile of 5 cards is huge. So definitely interesting. It's really interesting to see those cards, a standard legal dual land, if you want to call it that, make its way into the format and actually be so impactful in so many varieties of decks. And I guess for your deck too, like, it helps set up your Delver, helps turn on your Dragonreach Channeler, it makes your Murktide Regent bigger. Like, it really does it all.
Yeah, and especially with some of the times when I had like a channeler out, it was, all right, I just need, well, really anything, because mm-hmm. a fetch would just, oh, that gets me a surveil, or a spell gets me a surveil. So just getting to allow me something else to just churn through my deck to find what I needed.
Okay. So
it was really great.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, how good did it feel anytime you got to pick it up with Daze?
I'm trying to think how many times I picked it up with Daze. I had the opportunity to a few times, and I think I only did like twice. And so it was maybe like a 6 or a 7, because the times I didn't want to, just a lower resource, I still want to have access to, you know, 2, 3, 4 mana the next turn. But the few times I did, it was very impactful of just like, all right, it just helps me keep getting to what I want to get to. So that's another fun interaction.
I was going to mention too, like going into the weekend, one of the decks I was, you know, I thought the Riskaminator deck, if that's what we're calling it, I thought it was going to be relatively popular. I thought Bug Beans was going to be particularly popular as well. Was there any kind of like special things in your sideboard that were tuned for this kind of metagame, or was it like a very, you know, bread and butter, this is what I would do regardless of what people were doing kind of sideboard?
For the most part, it's pretty bread and butter. It's just with the Riskaminator deck, I want the cages over Surgical Extractions just as a get something down on turn one, so that it can't be griefed out just before a reanimation spell. But aside from that, it's pretty standard of what I would be doing otherwise.
Yeah, I've been... shout-out to the Bug Beans Discord, Pokemoki, started one recently. And one of the cards I've been kind of preaching for is Grafdigger's Cage. I just think it's so good in this format right now, and the number of times I've had a Surgical Extraction get griefed by Riskaminator is way too high. I'd rather just have it in play, having something that I can protect that they have trouble returning back to your hand. I mean, outside of like Wail of the Forgotten, there's really not a lot of things that they're main decking. That may be Brazen Borrower. There's not a lot of things in main decking that can return it back to your hand once it's in play. So I really do like the idea of Cage.
Yeah, and it gives some extra utility also against Cephalid Breakfast and Storm.
Yeah,
those
absolutely.
Those are the other two times I brought it in over the weekend.
So while we're kind of focusing on Riskaminator, I do want to ask, how did you sideboard against it this weekend? Because I've heard a lot of people talk about how difficult it is to figure out what your plan is, because, you know, you don't want to board out your Force of Wills like you might against a fair deck, because they're just going to, like, reanimate you, but, like, you can't necessarily board out your Lightning Bolts like you might against a Reanimator deck, because they're going to, like, kill you with Dothy Voidwalker. So just, like, how did you navigate that?
Well, I actually only played it once in the finals. So my boarding, I brought in the two cages, and looking at my sideboard again, I didn't write down what I did. That is my goal for the next event, is to write out a sideboard guide.
I say that all the time. Like, this is going to be the event. I've got 3 weeks, 2 weeks, week and a half.
Oh, I've
it's
got this
2 days.
Morning.
This morning. Like, got to do it.
I think I boarded in just the two cages and maybe a Pyroblast over the Chain Lightning. And I think a Bauble and a land. Just because, like, I don't necessarily want the card disadvantage of Force of Negation, even though it can be huge against some of the reanimation spells. So just cage and keeping up the pressure feels good enough, and it worked out pretty well.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've been kind of not upset about, but the Bug Beans deck I think is very good at having the counter magic to fight the scam matchup, but it just doesn't have the pressure. I think the pressure is such an important factor. And, you know, you actually having access to, you know, a number of one drops that, you know, can very easily slip under on turn one or two while they're setting up and allow you to kind of get going, I think it's a huge benefit for you.
Yeah. It's also nice, just while we're talking about sideboarding, I like having the 19th land in the Thundering Falls because it does allow some matchups that I can easily just, oh, I'll trim a land, and as long as I'm not being wastelanded too much. Just give some extra options.
Absolutely.
So, do you want to run us through how your day actually went?
Yeah. So I enjoy this venue in, air quotes, Philadelphia.
I love this
because
venue.
I love it too. I grew up in King of Prussia. Like my parents' house is 2 miles from the casino.
Nice.
So got to stay at my parents', hang out with my brother, and then, you know, just drive 5 minutes and go to the basement of the Valley Forge Casino. So round one, I played against Blue-Green Cascade.
Which, like, I'm sure you'll say this at some point, but I just want to get this out of the way. I'm so disappointed that they did not use Melee to submit this deck list, because I want to know what's in this deck list so badly.
Yeah, they were having trouble and had the paper one. Turn one just goes, Suspend Ancestral Visions. Oh, all right, we're doing that. And that was my only loss of the day. Because have trouble beating Uro round one. And then as he's cascading in game two, it's just like, all right, endurance, like multiple back to basics. And shit. It's like, okay, can't do a ton there.
So for the listeners, you obviously mentioned they were cascading into visions. Were they cascading into anything else? Like what else? So they had Uro, but was it like a control deck? Was it like a tempo deck?
So they were trying to do some tempo. They had a Rhino token like out at once they started cascading at wit, but no, Crashing Footfalls. So it's just a split of Ancestral Visions and See the Truth.
I love See the Truth.
So just...
For the listeners at home, See the Truth is, I could be wrong, 2 mana, look at the top 3 cards of your library, put one of them in the hand, and put the other 2 in the bottom of your library. If you cast this card from exile...
Anywhere other than your hand.
Oh, so close. If you're anywhere other than your hand, draw 3 cards instead.
It's actually so not draw. It's put, which is very relevant in an Orcish Bowmaster format. So you just put them in your hand. You do not draw them. They do not get to make their their Orc army bigger.
That's actually very relevant.
It felt like more of a control deck with just using the Shardless Agents and draw spells to just keep trying to counter some things, keep Uro going.
Doesn't sound bad. I mean, it kind of reminds me of, like, Shardless Agent, I guess, Sans Black. That's not terrible.
Yeah, so seems pretty good. Round two, I played Esper Stoneblade with Cryptic Coat, which was pretty cool.
That card has, like, continued to impress me. I think it doesn't feel like it should be as good as it is, but, like, you know, that's, like, one of those cards you leave it alone for, like, 2 or 3 turns, and suddenly you're facing down, like, you know, 4 2/2s and an unblockable 3/2 on top of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of people comparing it to True Name, and it's like, True Name's not really seeing much play, and I hear a lot of people comparing it to Batterskull, which again is not the card that it used to be, but it's kind of like both stapled together, which is a problem, right? I feel like you have 2 cards that are like, okay, this is like 80% legacy playable, and then you staple them together, and you're like, okay, now it's a card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in that match, I pyroblasted it while it was in play, but then they still had 2/2.
Yeah.
So it's doing some good work there. Round 3, I somehow 2-0'd lands, which, just thinking of it from, you know, when I first started playing with, you know, young Pyromancer and into them playing Tabernacle, and just the lands matchup did not feel very good, but I just had, like, game 2, Force of Negation on the Loam, and just some early pressure and some Loams of theirs not dredging into anything great. Played against Bug Beans round 4, where games 1 and 2 were each of us wastelanding the other into not being able to do much. And then I just have here in my notes Murktide for game 3. But I think that's how a lot of matchups end up going.
That is true. That's very true. It's a relevant matchup. I think the Bug Beans versus the Grixis Delver list is, my opinion, I guess, might be a little skewed, but what are your opinions on that matchup in general?
It feels very tough from the Delver side, because if they can kind of get going a little bit, they have Witherbloom Command of just, all right, well, kill a Bowmaster of yours and or an unflipped Delver or something and get back a Wasteland. And then the just card advantage from Beans can just be a bit too much sometimes. So it's, I have found success with just, all right, I need to be super aggressive and just keep a bunch of threats and hope something gets there. So I only played against it the once and won, but I was concerned through large chunks of the match.
Yeah, I've definitely found the same idea. Like, on the Bug side, the games I end up winning are the ones where I can get down up the Beanstalk. I'm not getting punished by the Orcish Bowmaster. My bigger spells, my Murderous Cuts, and my Murktides are at least cantripping, and I'm able to actually keep pace with, you know, one or two threats on the board. But, like, once you start getting into, like, it's like, oh, I've got, you know, 2 Delvers and a DRC, and I've also have 2 mana up. You're like, I'm not winning this game. Like, I know this already. I'm going to get got by a spell pierce or, like, a misstep or something crazy, and I'm going to die. I guess, well, after that, you ended up playing, was it Donald Agnew? But I don't know what he was actually on.
Goblins.
Oh. Okay.
So that was my first experience with stickers, and I don't like counting vowels.
Okay, so are we talking like the Turbo Muxus deck or like the Vile Goblins?
Turbo Muxus. So the like real MVP there for them was Bombardiers, because that got them game 1. And it's just a must kill. Like multiple times, I just had the lightning bolt, and it was like, all right, so I'm not going to lose to this. But otherwise, like the one game, it's just, all right, I'll attack, sack Matron, take 5. Okay, all right, I'm dead. And then, like, got Sticker Goblin into Sticker Goblin into Muxist in game 3, but I had a Murktide that could block a 2/2, and I could take 17 and go to 1. So it's definitely a scary deck, and the whole time you're just thinking, all right, well, I just hope I don't get Muxist this turn.
I was going to mention, too, like this in your deck, you're playing the Chain Lightning, which obviously I think in this matchup you probably still want it, but I guess the alternative in my mind is you could play that or you could play Unholy Heat, which obviously being an instant I think is relevant. Chain Lightning actually goes to the face and deals a little bit more damage, also relevant. What kind of pushed you towards the Chain Lightning versus the Unholy, well, with like the defining factor.
What I like most about the Chain Lightning is keeping the sorcery count high for Delirium, because you've got the four Ponders, the one Molten Collapse, and then the four Baubles. So just, I wanted another sorcery to just be able to flip the Dragon's Rage Channelers more.
Okay.
And also going faces is nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I don't know if you guys have... Well, actually, before I go into that, question about your sticker goblin opponent then. When they revealed the sticker sheet, did they, like, how did they handle it? Did they say, like, hey, this is how many vowels are on it? Did they just, like, not acknowledge it, put it away? Like,
no, just, here are the stickers, here's it in the corner, and like we didn't talk about it until they resolved.
Yeah, I have to say, I think I said this on here before, I really appreciate the players who have like when you pull out a sticker sheet, it's kind of, the assumption is just you're on goblins, right? Like you're not like, I don't know. So I really appreciate the people who are like, hey, I got a four and two fives or whatever. Just like, just be upfront. Like, nobody's happy that stick. Well, most people aren't happy stickers are the format. Just like,
nobody wants to be here.
Easy on us, you know. Like, I don't know, but yeah, I don't know if you guys saw. Apparently, they are going to be changing the way stickers work in paper.
Sure, why not?
So
I spent so much time learning the rules already.
I think so. I didn't see it myself, but my understanding is their goal is to make it a better experience for Legacy players. Personally, I'm kind of hoping they go to the Moto implementation and just roll a die, which I think is, I don't know, I think it's a little bit stronger, but it's also, like, way easier, and also it's harder to plan around.
Yeah, but that's also something where you need to remind people you can't use a spin down as your d20 to roll.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like, but again, like, the situations I've seen with sticker goblins specifically are like really bizarre. Like, I've seen people be like, oh, I'm gonna reanimate your sticker goblin, I'll use the mana to help cast this next creature, and they're like, okay, do you have stickers? No, you can't borrow mine, so I don't know what to tell you. Which again, like, it's, the rules for it are very unique. I mean, same thing with attractions, like they do very unique things. It's hard to imagine the impact they're going to have, but like, I just, like, I don't think I've ever been as confused by a mechanic than stickers.
I don't know. Attractions is definitely more confusing than stickers. Also, just in case you are unaware, so if you do reanimate your opponent's sticker goblin, you can randomly generate a sticker. There's like a website to use, which I assume not everyone knows.
No.
Which is like also problematic, but your better course of action, because you don't get to choose the stickers, you're not super likely to have a great result, right? So you're better off coming with your own sticker sheet to maximize it if you have reanimates in your deck, or like Phyrexian Metamorph or any other way where you might end up with it in play. For the listeners, Billy looks very frustrated by the words I'm saying.
I just, like, can't imagine the world in which I'm just like, I'm gonna bring my sticker sheet just in case.
That's because you're not one, a true I would never gamer, have that really. Accent.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the ultimate gamer. I'm not the but I feel like I shouldn't have to be. I don't know. Anyways, after you dealt with Goblin-geddon, what did you play after that?
Played against the mono blue PO deck, the Paradoxical Outcome one. I just saw the PO when it got milled to an Emery. This one, they had a mulligan to five game one, and then game two I just had a meltdown on turn three that hit some petals and some lands and don't need too much more. Round seven, Billy and I were sitting next to each other. So you got to see the end of my match against Cephalid Breakfast, which is another one of those matchups where you just have to be aware of the ways that you can just lose on the spot. And just, all right, so I should keep this here. This piece of interaction handles this. This handles the Stoneforge that they could play instead. And, you know, I misplayed a little bit that we were talking about, and another friend of ours after the game, like, I just wastelanded a saga instantly when they had a fetch that they would have needed to use. So if I had just been a little more patient, could have reduced the impact of the saga. Round 8, played against Doomsday, where lost to the second Thassa's Oracle. I could handle the one. Game 1, game 2 they mulliganed. I think game 3 they mulliganed. But I had a bunch of wastelands, and then they had to resolve Doomsday with 3 Lotus Petals and no other mana sources in play. I got to Daze. They forced, had one card left, and then I got there and made it to the top 8.
So, I mean, I think that's, I feel like this is understated, but I always love losing the first round and then just, like, rallying back and win after win after win, clawing for the victories. And I think that's cool that you went, you know, 0-1 to 7-1.
Yeah, I feel like the first round loss just both has that pressure of, all right, if I'm going to top 8, I need to win out, but also reduces the pressure of, okay, well, maybe I get home a little earlier, or yeah, we get them lunch. But it obviously worked out well for me this time.
I think it's really cool that you played against such a variety of decks in the Swiss, and I know that trend continues into the top 8. And I gotta say, that I think speaks really good things about the Legacy format, because it's not like any of the decks you played against, other than, well, the first one, or decks were like, what's going on there? You know, rounds 1 and 2, you didn't play against, like, top meta decks, but, like, past that, you just, like, played against decks that one should expect to see. Also, the PO deck in particular is just, like, super cool, and I'm always a big fan of Breakfast.
Yeah, a lot of neat decks. All my opponents were very nice and had a lot of fun games. And that's another thing I love about Legacy, is that you often just run into some very great people.
Speaking of great people, quarterfinal, you get to play against a friend of the show, Bryant Cook. On, of course, what does Brian even play? Does Brian play the... Well,
he had an initiative token, so... That's obviously what was happening.
Clearly.
Well, as we're sitting there getting set up, he's just, like, putting tokens out. I assume you know what I'm on. So, that, let's see, game 1. And actually, this was an interesting match from my opening hands, because I kept some that were my first hand was light on interaction, I think it was maybe 2 creatures and like a pond or a lightning bolt, something, just a didn't want to mull too low and wanted something there, and then just drew into some interaction. And then game 2, I believe I kept a hand with no creatures, just as a, all right, I can just rely on my cantrips to get me what I need. And of course I'm saying this, and 90s MTG, they recorded the top 8 matches. Okay. So I'll watch it again on YouTube and see how correct my memory of this is. But it was a long day. But Bryant did a relay for 6 that was like 3 land, a Chrome Mox, a Burning Wish, and a Brainstorm, and then just didn't quite get there. And then game 2 was where Counterbalance shined. He started out suspending a Gaia's Will. I played a Counterbalance. I don't remember if it hit a 1-drop at some point, but I had the pressure counterbalance, countered the Gaia's Will, and then later on played a Lion's Eye Diamond, which I got to fetch with, or I fetched the Surveil land prior, left a zero on top, countered the LED to end things. So counterbalance is a shining matchup there. And then
it's proving how good the Thundering Falls continues to be.
Yeah,
in your deck.
I was very happy with it all day. So aside from that one mulligan, which I feel like is a small price to pay, I also got into a few situations where throughout the tournament where my first land, I always want to start on a Valk, and then got into spots where, okay, I need to play a cantrip, and then, oh, well, now I need to play a Dragon's Rage Channeler. That needs a Volcanic Island. And then my third land, it's like, well, I kind of want the Surveil, but then I've got no underground seas out. But aside from that little bit of tension, like, it's not too bad. I only have the Bowmasters and Molten Collapse that I need black for.
Mm-hmm. Is it possible that you want Undercity Sewer instead of Thundering Falls? Like, still a blue source, but that way, like, you can see kind of sequence into the black source that you don't normally want till turn three or so anyways.
I hadn't thought of that, but I really like that idea.
Okay.
So, while we're talking about how great the Surveil lands are, since we just talked about the quarterfinals match, I also want to point out Bryant also has two in that big storm, which shows how powerful they are, right? Because you think of that big storm as the storm deck that's good at going off on turn one. So the fact that he's willing to take the time to play these Surveil lands just kind of shows the power.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's doing it off of Undercity Sewers and Commercial District. Commercial District,
it's the red-green one.
Red-green one, okay. So, like, this, the ability to actually have, you know, like, I want to set up to have my Veil, but I also do want to cast Ponder. I can't do both, so let me just get this land, put this into play, tap, Surveil, and then I also have access to, you know, my Veil for my next turn. That's a huge benefit. All right. Well, that brings, I guess, to the semifinal then.
Yeah. I played against Amy on a 5-color Beanstalk deck. So some cool things happening here, like Leyline of the Guild Pact and Scion of Draco. So some plays where I had to just think, wait, what? Both games 1 and 2, she started off with Leyline, and then, okay, so I'll use Flooded Strand, fetch a basic Plains, and Ponder. Oh, yeah, right, that's, you can do that. Yeah, cool. Yeah. So, some neat stuff with Leyline there. Game 1, she had a Scion, and I could not do anything about that. Game 2, I got to play a Bowmaster in response to a Brainstorm. And so that 4-4 Orc could just attack through Endurances. And then Price of Progress dealt some damage. I got to Molten Collapse a Murktide to get in with my 4-4. Game 3, some similar things. Wastelands keeping pressure up. And then Molten Collapse on Triumph of St. Catherine. So Molten Collapse was one of the MVPs in that matchup, just giving me an out to some larger creatures. I would definitely consider playing two, especially in, like, that matchup. You also get to, like, hit a creature and a Carpet of Flowers.
Which, like, I think a lot of the green decks, like, I actually cut mine out of my deck because I was afraid of them just getting hit by Witherbloom commands. But Molten Collapse is kind of another reason I'm really down on one mana, you know, permanence, non-creature permanence right now. Besides Cage is fine.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So Amy's deck is sweet. I know she took it from Jarvis. I also know that I played against Amy at an event for the first time recently, and she was a pretty fun opponent. But yeah, I'm definitely intrigued by this deck. It looks like A few other people played something similar this weekend, and it didn't really pan out too well for them. But just like you, she lost the first round and then just like rattled off a ton of wins. So,
oh, nice.
I'm definitely, I'll probably be trying this out at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really cool deck, really cool player. And then we get to the finals, which has some exciting things about it.
Oh my gosh.
So the hall officially closed at 6. So everyone's starting to pack up and such, which is also fun because my sleeves were splitting a little bit after round 8. And so I'm rushing around to try and find a vendor who, as they're like putting their boxes away, who has sleeves so that I can have fresh sleeves for the top 8. So we talk about everything pre-game. We play game 1. I don't really have too much here, but like he reanimated a grief, and then, but I just had some attackers and got there. Game 2, we go, we start. He plays a Ponder on turn 1. I play a Delver on turn 1, and then we need to switch tables. So the entire top 8, they're cleaning up the tables with a forklift. And then, so forklift just kind of pulls over.
Almost knocks me over.
Yeah, almost ran into map.
No apology.
Just pushing like a plastic table. Oh, if you guys are going to keep playing, we need that table. Wait, are you kidding? No. You can keep playing. You just need to be on this table, not that table. Like, right now. And we both look at the head judge and it's like, all right, well, let's go. So we're doing it like, all right, let's go take our hands over. Let's go take our permanents over. Let's go take... So we quickly switch on to that and then just play the rest of that. So that was a unique experience.
Just to add to this, by the way, the guy moving, I think with being as nice as he could be,
no.
Like he's trying to work, I get that. I just want to say, he said, yeah, I need you guys to move right now. And then he repeated, but said differently the second time, like, right meow. I was like, did that guy just say right meow? Like, what is happening? Like, this is, like, besides the banging of tables... And obviously you having to move, and Mapson almost getting just ran over and made into a pancake. The idea that this man at the end of this just says, right meow, I was like, I can't handle this, it's too much.
I'm pretty sure he didn't say that, and that was in your head.
I'm fairly confident. We will have to ask Chris, because Chris was there too. I swear he said, right meow.
I'm pretty sure he said right now, and you just needed sleep.
That's possible, too. That's very possible.
This is going to sound terrible, but he also had an accent, so maybe you just didn't hear him right because of that.
I swear, first time, right now. Second time, right meow. I don't know. I'll take it to my grave.
Yeah, no, 0%.
Yeah. All right, well, so after your mid-match movement, how'd the rest of it end?
I mean, game 2, I lose... because of a reanimated troll. And then game 3, just did some Bowmasters back and forth. I had more of them. And, you know, just got to attack with some 3-power flyers. And, yeah, so it was very exciting. And it was a fun day. I did... play, as Mapson brought up, against a unique deck every round, which is fun, and not the experience of some of my opponents. My finals opponent said he had played against Delver like 4 times, and which I didn't really see that much Delver around, even though looking at the melee statistics, that was the most played deck. But still at like 7% of the field. So it was pretty diverse. It was a fun event. I always like getting to hang out with you guys between rounds. and it especially felt good with as a local event.
Yeah. Shout out to your finals opponent, who is also listening to the show, so I'm sure he's listening now. Nick, I believe you'll get revenge one day, but not today. But yeah, I mean, like, it is one of the things that I think is really tough about just Legacy in general, right, is trying to face down the variety decks that are possible, but, like, it's wild that, you know, in the same event that you played against Blue-Green Cascade, Nick played against Grixis, Dimir, Grixis, and then, Storm into Scam, and then Grixis Delver again. Like, that is just, like, kind of the nature of Legacy, where they're very easily in the same event, in the same room. It doesn't matter how many people there are. You can have wildly different events while still having a very similar end. So, is this, like, your first, like, big, like, iconic win?
Yes. Yeah. I won an Innistrad pre-release once.
Nice.
And then some Pauper tournament where Swiss was Pauper, the top eight was a Pauper cube draft, and then this. I mean, like, I made the finals of one of the, like, Eternal extravaganzas, but then this is the first big win, so it's cool to have a little plaque, and it feels good to have some success at something. Especially when it's asking my wife, like, are you okay watching the kids for the weekend so that I can go play Magic? Not that it's any less valid not doing well, but it feels better to go, like, oh, I have something to show for it, in addition to, you know, the fun of the gathering.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, that is, I think the best part, like, and especially, like you said, it's hard to get away. It's hard to find time to be playing Magic, and being able to, you know, have a marquee win in your hometown, essentially, you know, your birthplace. I think that's a really cool kind of sweet end to the weekend. I guess besides your drive home, which I'm sure was awful. I know that was probably not the way you wanted to actually end your weekend.
Oh, yeah. I would have loved to just, like, go out to dinner with you guys and stuff, but... gotta be at school tomorrow morning.
Okay, so I do want to... I want to continue talking about this. I know you eventually need to go, and Mattson also made the finals of another 5K, so I want to talk about that,
congrats.
Too.
Thank you. We definitely are approaching the time Patrick needed to go, so I don't know how we want to do this. We just want to speed run this. If we want to keep talking to Patrick for 10 minutes and then, like, talk about me after, I don't know. We didn't plan.
Let's talk about your deck. You actually, in Modern, you played, I think, what was the breakout deck of the Modern, in the Modern
event. Oh my god, yeah.
Tell us about what you were playing.
So, I played an Esper Gorios deck, which I'll get into slightly more in detail. But yeah, when we say it had a breakout weekend, so it top eighted the Friday 5K. That same player then turned around and got top 16 on Saturday. The deck also got first and second in the 10K on Saturday. Then one of those players turned around and got top four on Sunday, joined by his teammate in top four. And then me, obviously, losing in the finals with the same deck. And then, because, you know, that's definitely not enough, it got ninth place in the Australia-New Zealand Regional Championship. It won the Chinese Regional Championship. And then I think there was another event it did well in. So it just kind of, like, tore it up. Like, I don't know. It just, like, it came to win. But yeah, so I played an Esper Gorios deck, which is a deck that's been around for a while and I previously thought was kind of trash. I'm not entirely sure what changed. I do think it's been innovated on some lately. For those who haven't seen it, it's pretty easy to find the list at this point. You can find it on Melee. Hopefully Billy puts it in the show notes. I don't do the show notes, so I can't guarantee it'll be there, but I can hope and pray. But yeah, your big goal is you're playing some looting effects in the form of Tainted Indulgence and Faithful Mending. You're trying to discard one of your four Atraxas or two Goryeos, Gristlebrands, and then Goryeo's Vengeance to put them into play. And then after you attack and you have gotten a big advantage, you Ephemerate, or depending on which version you're playing, Touch of the Spirit Realm or Cloud Shift or Momentary Blink, which I think is especially cool. You do that, so you flicker it, and then you get to keep your fatty around. In addition to being able to just make a turn 3 Atraxa or Gristlebrand, it's also a Grief Scam deck, because we all know how fun Grief Scam is. So you don't actually play the traditional scam cards, but you have the Ephemerates, obviously, so you can just go turn 1, Grief You, Ephemerate, Grief You again, untap, Grief You a third time. You're also a Solitude deck. You also play Phalange Archaeologist, which is really good with Ephemerate, because you're just turbo-filling your graveyard to find the creatures. And the deck played so smooth. I played Amulet on Saturday. It did not go well. I played this deck on Sunday, and it demolished. I don't know. It just felt so unbelievably clean.
I mean, every time I would walk by and see one of your matches, it was just like, oh, you just flickered an Atraxa. Oh, yeah, it looked like you were doing awesome things.
Yeah, there was just so many times where I was like, okay, so which of these cards do I take? And then, like, I think for a bit, and then I just, like, think to myself, like, does it even matter? Like, I'm just going to be up 7 cards at the end of this turn. Like, I'm going to be discarding 4 cards no matter what. Like...
Yeah, and I've actually been playing Creative Control, in Legacy recently, and Natural Order into Atraxa always feels good, but in that deck you normally only draw 3 cards, maybe you get 4 cards. I feel like you were drawing like 5 cards just every single time Atraxa resolved.
Yeah, I have more I want to say about the deck, but I know Patrick just actually said he does need to go. So we want to pause real quick and just thank you again, Patrick, for coming on. Really appreciate it. I know you are not big on Twitter, but if people have any questions or thoughts or anything, is there a best way for people to reach you?
Yeah, on Twitter, I'm Owens_Patrick, and I can send that to you if you want to put it in the notes or anything. I guess I should try and be more active on there.
Probably not.
But...
You're probably doing the right thing, yeah. But it's good to be able to talk to people, and obviously, like, picking your brain for the last hour has been helpful, and obviously we have access to you whenever we want. But yeah, I think the listeners might want to reach out occasionally too if they want to see what you think about their Undercity Sewer Splash or whatnot. Yeah. Alright, well, thank you for coming on, and I hope you have a good rest of your night.
Thanks. That was fun. So we're definitely going long, but still have a lot to say about the Goryeo's deck. One of the things is people aren't sure where to, which blink spell to play. They definitely all have their pros and cons. The Touch of the Spirit Realm is nice because it's an enchantment, so it's another type to get off of Atraxa. I also won multiple games because I exiled my opponent's stuff and just like, oh, you have this blocker? No, you don't. Especially since your other removal is Solitude, and like, yes, it gets rid of everything, but sometimes you're like, okay, you're at 6 and you have a blocker, and now you're at 10, so now I don't have lethal. Like, you still usually win those games, but just being like, nope, this is done now, is obviously very good. Momentary Blink is really cool because you can discard it early to your looting effects, or if you flip it off of Phalange Archaeologist, then it's kind of an extra piece of value. So that's a blink spell that has 4 mana flashback. And the last one people were playing is Cloud Shift, which is just like Ephemerate without rebound. I'm pretty sure that's the worst option. I'm not interested in playing it. But it's good to talk about. The other thing that's unclear is Force of Negation might be busted in the main deck. I didn't play any. I know Team Sunny Days, who tore it up this weekend, and was playing one in the main deck. I did have two in the sideboard and was happy enough bringing them in. But, you know, you think about Violent Outburst, part of the reason that just made that so good, touching on it being banned, was you got to play your combo on the opponent's turn and protect it with Force of Negation. And, you know, why not do the same thing in this deck? Also, there's questions of should you play more Subtleties main deck, because Subtlety was, like, excellent out of the sideboard. I played a match. It was actually in the finals. I just, like, countered, well, Subtletied a Primeval Titan, like, 3 or 4 turns in a row. It's just, like, Subtlety. Next turn, he was like, oh, I hope you don't have the Ephemerate. I just, like, cast another Subtlety. He's like, okay, I hope you don't have it again. Like, Ephemerate. And then the Ephemerate's cool because, like, I just got to untap an Ephemerate, rebounded on my Archaeologist, so it's still, like, very good value. But yeah, the deck was insane for me all day. I played against a good variety of decks. The metagame's going to be slightly different moving forward. Hopefully the deck is still good. It's impossible to know for certain, but I would very highly recommend it. I'm definitely going to keep playing it. So for those curious, I played against Asmofood, where I got to destroy my opponent in game 2. It was really gross. They led with an Underworld Cookbook. I go to grief them. They discard an Oval Chase Daredevil. I surgical it, hit another one that's in their hand. And then I get to, like, grief ephemerate them, so I just actually leave them with nothing. So that was, like...
That feels good.
Yeah, that was insane. Then I beat Recto Scam, which I was kind of surprised that I was able to beat the Dothi Voidwalker Leyline of the Void deck, and that really speaks to the power of what I was playing. Then I played against Orzhov Stoneblade, which kind of felt slightly easier than Rakdos. And then I played against Yawgmoth, which I was told is a good matchup and felt so unbelievably bad. My opponent told me they had, like, 3 Endurance, I think main deck, plus the Cauldrons, and I just couldn't do anything. I played against Living End. When your opponent's strategy is bringing everything back from the graveyard, and in both game 1 and 2, on their upkeep, you go, turn 2 upkeep, you go Faithful Mending, discard Atraxa and Gristlebrand. It's good strategy. God. And then
I didn't think about that.
Then I played.
That never crossed my mind.
Yeah, does that sound good to you, Billy?
That does sound good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that because I'm not sure I haven't played the deck myself yet, but, like, the one issue I guess that comes up is like it's like I have to find Gorya's Vengeance. They have to find a reanimation spell. So for them just to do the work for you is, like, fantastic.
Yeah, it's like you just put them in the spot where it's like you can't do anything, and then like,
yeah.
If you Gorya's like, I would Gorya's one, and then my opponent would just like look at it and be like, do I kill it? Like if I kill it, I just lose to the one in the graveyard. And even in game 2, they went for a Living End, cast. They Endurance'd me, and then I was just like, okay, Living End still on the stack, cast a Faithful Mending, do it again. He was like, you just had it? And I was like, yeah. And then I won very easily.
Yeah.
And then I played 2 mirror matches, which was, like, really intense. It is tricky to navigate. The second one was against Jake Beardsley, Pro Tour champion. I was able to get my revenge for how badly he destroyed me last time we played. So that was fun. And then I played my winning in against Christopher Giuliano, who some might remember from the SCG tour. He was on Red Green Valakut. And so that went pretty well for me. And then this is good, where it's going to sound like a cop-out that I was in the finals. I was paired against Yawgmoth. I am not queued for Dallas, and my opponent is. So my opponent was nice enough to concede to me. Don't know them at all, so they definitely did not owe me anything. So really appreciate that. Then I got paired against William Thompson in the mirror in the semifinals. He does know me, does not owe me anything still, but also just shook my hand, said, I want to see you in Dallas, and moved on. And then my finals opponent, Julian Henry, a.k.a. Lycerg42 for you Amulet fans, unfortunately also not queued for Dallas, and managed to win what I think was actually a very good match.
It was insane, yeah.
I was a little bit heartbroken because in game three, I had everything like lined up. I was just like, I could see the trophy in my hands already. I was like, I'm going to win this. Then I'm going to walk over there and watch Patrick win his. It's going to be like insane. We're going to take pictures together to send to our wives and talk about how great we are. I'm going to go to Dallas. Like, you know, it was just like everything was amazing. I had the subtlety to cover his endurance. And then he cast Turn to Earth. And I did not have Force Negation, and I did not have a second Goryeo. Well, I had a second Goryeo's, but not the mana. And then I didn't have a third Goryeo's. If I had a third Goryeo's, I still could have won. But yeah, I just couldn't come back. And to be fair, Julian played like a master, which is probably because he is, right? Like, when I first started playing the deck, I remember copying his list. I remember he was back when, it feels weird to say back when Canister was working on Amulet, because he's an Amulet, like, main again. But, like, back when Canister was, like, first involved in, like, breaking Amulet, I know him and Julian were working kind of close together on that. But, yeah, so definitely a rough loss, but the deck just played so smooth all day, and it just did disgusting things. Everyone I was talking to about it was just like, yeah, that looks broken. And I was like, it feels broken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of the games I saw you, I don't think you had, like, close games. I'm sure you did, right? But, like, a lot of the games I saw were, like, you barely lost, or you murdered your opponent and stomped in their face in public. And, like, there was really no in-between with that. And I guess that's just the nature of playing Gristlebrand and playing Atraxa, right, where you're drawing five, or I think I saw one turn where you drew 21 cards.
Yeah, because I couldn't find an Ephemerae.
Yeah. Which is insane, but, like, the one turn... dying over here. The one turn with Glorious Vengeance into Gristlebrand, attack, draw seven... can't find what I want, so I'm gonna draw another seven. Oh, I guess this is fine. I'll grief you. I'll ephemerate, grief you again. I'll cast this. I'll pitch this other grief, and I guess you can go. And oh, let me discard 14 cards. It's like, okay, well that's we're done, right? We're good. We can leave.
Yeah, like, I won that game.
The game ended very quickly.
Crazy.
You did. Yeah, you did. That's good. I would have been very concerned if you had managed to lose that game somehow. So, I mean, obviously congrats on the victory. I'm sure even though you lost, I'm sure you're happy, Amulet Aficionado won. And I guess you're probably excited too, because after, you know, yesterday we have a new format that is devoid of Violent Outburst. Is this something that is going to make a huge change to the format? Obviously, we are going to see, I guess, a bit of a decline on Rhinos and Living End, I guess, would be the obvious ones. But, I mean, are those decks still playable? Are we expecting a new top dog, or is it going to be more or less like business as usual?
Those decks are 100% still playable. Mamina Ne has already 5-0'd with Bant, Living End, just like slotting in Ardent Plea. I was kind of surprised to see them head in the Ardent Plea direction instead of going back to Demonic Dread. But I've already seen that. I think they also had Teferi in their deck, so you could still do it at Instant Speed, because why not? Seen plenty of Rhydos players posting lists going back to, or going to a Bant Shell, which is still very good for the deck, right? You still get to do the Scion Side of Draco leyline thing. But now, because you're going into white for Ardent Plea, and you already have leyline bindings in that build, you can be a Solitude deck if you want as well. So it's like, you're giving up some amount of power by having to go at sorcery speed, obviously, right? Like, you're way weaker into things like Supreme Verdict, Storm's Wrath, Damnation. Not that that one's seen as a lot of play. Damn, which is one I was playing this weekend. But the cards surrounding your, you know, your Rhino plan, I think, are actually a little bit stronger in these versions. Yeah. So, like, is it weaker? I don't know, probably, but, like, not by that much. Like, I imagine you're actually probably a better deck game one, and then just weaker post-board, but, like, it's not like you're weak, you know?
Yeah, and, like, I think one of the funny things about the deck was, like, yeah, I mean, Violent Outburst lets you play things at instant speed, like, that's really good, but, like, if you're playing, you know, white, and you still have blue, you can just play Teferi, and then they can't counter your stuff regardless. It doesn't particularly matter. But also, you have this kind of edge in the mirrors, the pseudo mirrors. You know, them being able to never actually cascade. So there definitely are some benefits to, like you said, like, this might be like one of those situations, like, with the, I don't want to compare this to Hogak, but I'm just explaining this this reference, so don't jump down my throat. When the Hogak deck started getting, like, banned kind of piecemeal, part by part, we ended up seeing the deck kind of, like, get stronger at points because they, like, oh, you can't play this card anymore. It's like, we shouldn't have been playing this card anyways. You're right. Anyways, and they would jump into this new version of the deck. I don't know how much more you really need to neuter those Cascade decks. I think, I do think Violent Outburst is a nice call, but it is interesting to kind of see this deck evolve and, like you said, still be proficient, especially when you're a really strong pilot.
Yeah, and the other thing that's really nice about it is, like, your combo deck should not be able to use Force Negation as a means to make sure it goes off, you know, which is why I'm interested in potentially trying that with Gorios. But it's nice that they have fixed that issue. Living End can't just be like, Violent Outburst, oh, you have a spell pierce? Well, it's your turn, so Force Negation it. Can I do my thing now? Like, that should not be happening. And again, just making them play main phase so you can untap and go, okay, I can actually deal with this thing that would have been the game if it happened at instant speed is, I think, nice. Because I still think if somebody just goes, well, it's turn three, put 8 or 10 power into play, like, that's still good, right? Like, I don't think the Rhinos players were ever mad when they had to cast Shardless Agent.
Yeah, being able to end turn three with 10 power is deeth. It's fine. I think that deck will be fine. And again, I think that's the fact that they get to ban a card in the format that is, I think, generally a good play for the format in terms of kind of neutering that deck, but also making it just more enjoyable generally. Again, one of my issues in the format before was like you said, I don't like Force Negation being a offensive spell. I want it to be a defensive spell. I want it to be something you do to protect yourself, not to just be able to kind of roll over an opponent for free. And I think that does end up doing that, but it does also kind of open up the door for some other decks, you know, kind of knocking those decks down a notch does make some other decks better in the format. One of the first ones that came to my mind was something I thought you would like, would be Amulet Acting actually gets a little bit better.
Yeah, so Amulet does get a little bit better, but so that is good. I am happy about that, even as I have found a new deck to love. I will say Scam probably also improves, though. It was a deck that preyed on Living End, but Rhinos was always more popular, and Rhinos was not a good matchup for it. And Scam coming up in popularity can also kind of keep Amulet in check. And the games are just way less fun than the games are versus Rhinos. And the other thing is, I don't want Scam to ever be good, because I think Reef Scam is just like, it's just a miserable play experience. So like, if we end up in a world where Rakdos Scam and Goryeos are both good, like, that's awful. Though I'm not sure if Goryeos stays good, because I know Living End, which I was just saying is like one of its best matchups, goes on the decline. And then Rakdos pops back up, and even though I beat it, I feel like that, I don't know, it just can't be a good matchup. I could be wrong on that, but yeah, we'll see. I think Yawgmoth also gets better because it was terrible against Rhinos, and I think them moving at sorcery speed makes things a lot easier to figure out.
Yeah, a lot more palatable. It's funny how, like, these bans, like, I mean, obviously Fury, sure, whatever, beans, I get. But I feel like the bans just keep kind of being in Yawgmoth's favor. It's the same thing, I don't think, that happened with Amulet, where Amulet kind of, like, got, obviously, banned historically a long time ago. But kind of, like, dodges all the other bans and kind of, like, puts itself in a better position each time without really drawing too much attention, which I good for Amulet.
No, I think Yogg has drawn the attention. I would not be shocked to see something get hit from it. I'm not saying, like, in the next month or anything, but, you know, at some point in the future, I would not be shocked.
We see a Young Wolf ban, or a, I don't even know what you literally ban from that deck. I think it's hard to find something in, like, in particular that would be, like, a this is what you have to do kind of ban.
Yeah, it's really awkward because it's just, like, a lot of cards that just work insanely well together. Like, part of me wants it to be Delighted Halfling, just because then the deck is, like, if it replaces that with, like, traditional Mana Dorks, it gets a little bit weaker versus, like, Ren and Six again. Having Grisk be uncounterable on turn two is, like, kind of a problem, I feel like. Especially, like, you think of, like, you know, Murktide's never going to be great against this deck, right? But, like, if they want to interact with, like, the Grisk, then it's like they have to spend their mana killing the Halfling, but then maybe if they're just playing the Grisk while you're, like, while you've wasted your mana on that, like, I don't know. It's just, like, it's also awkward. And then, like, you don't even want to kill anything because it's, like, you put the Grisk in the graveyard and then they just Cauldron it. And it's like, you deal with all of that, and they're like, oh, I have this Yawgmoth. And it's just like, you can't put anything in the right place.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like, short of having a Leyline of the Void in play, there's no correct place for you to put things. It's going to always end up somewhere somehow more dangerous. I'm definitely excited, though. I mean, like, I haven't been too invested in Modern lately. I mean, obviously, with the Legacy 5K, I knew I was going to be playing in, and the Legacy Showcase Challenge on Sunday.
Totally don't have my kind of my.
I think I just hit. I think I'm at like 35, which I mean I'll definitely hit 5 more before the weekend. Not to pat my own back here, but I think I'll hit 5 more before then. That's kind of all my only focus, but I'm excited though. Modern looks like it's at least exciting. I know. I was having some personal issues trying to, like, find a deck that was, I thought, kind of interesting without being, like, overly busted or, you know, I don't have fun with those kind of formats. I like it when everything is playable. I don't feel like that's where it was, but hopefully the Violent Outburst ban does kind of even out the field.
Yeah, so we'll certainly see. Unfortunately, I don't think I have any Modern coming up. Hi there, so, because my next event is going to be Sargeras event, which is Legacy. Actually, I have a standard RCQ before then, and then Sargeras event, and then I kind of have a break until Dallas, which I am very looking forward to. I know I mentioned this to you, technically it hasn't been said on the show yet. I'm getting kind of burnt out, not on Magic, like I actually am like very excited to keep playing Magic, but I am burnt out on events. I need a break. I have done a lot of traveling. I'm very excited to just, like, do whatever I want and not care if I win. I'm like, in the middle of a league with some lands right now, having a great time. I want to play some Insidious Roots decks. Yeah, just...
I've got an Insidious Roots deck for you. We'll talk about this after the show. It's not a now thing, but I definitely have a deck I'm brewing, but I will send you some screenshots tonight when I'm playing. All right. With that, we should probably get back to relax, and let's get out of here. Mapson, where can people find you?
You can find me back on the Dark Depths podcast after a long time away. You can find me on Twitter at Expedition Map to tell me how much you hate that Koryuz is taking over the format or how sweet you think it is. So just at Expedition Map, and you can definitely find me on those Moto streets again. Where can people find you?
If you're interested in finding me, I am at Bad Luck Bend on Twitter. Relatively active, so you should be able to contact me pretty easily if you want to. Interested in contacting the show, we're at Depth_podcast on Twitter as well. We've got all of our link trees there, including our sponsors, Magnolia Gaming and Heavy Play. So definitely check out those lovely sponsors, as well as maybe you want to become a patron. Maybe you want to be I think it's pretty cool, both the people in the finals of that Legacy event were listeners of the show, so obviously we're doing something right there. But definitely, check us out. If you want to become a patron, obviously you can do that as well. We always love the support. Show's always going to be free, but, never hurts to help us out. I guess with that, see you next week.
See you next week.
Gavin Maya taps with green, the scene sees reclaim. Untap sack of flagstones, go seek the plains. Then tutor up the stage, so pull out your playbill. Darkness podcast starring Billy Mitchell and Michael Mapson on the microphone. Dripping in Mox Diamonds, the collector of curtains up on act one of this magic show. Set in a forest so dense it looks decomposed, with red LeCrevy knights crush against Death Shadow on the legendary lake covered in ice and snow. Underneath the surface lurks a lonely evil, an avatar so dark it could cause upheaval. The knight lunges forward going for the kill, but Death Shadow's too tricky, it just won't sit still. It's stubborn denials compile a stack so thick, the bazooka bug emerges with Gurmag's angling. The knight takes a swing at the zombie fishes, but falls submerged for such a distance. Forsaken in the haze of the street wraith's fringes, who wanna stuff her out, they don't seek forgiveness. Her final breath draws a deafening silence, a sound so sinister no one could describe it. It's like the subtle cracking of a turtle shell, or the surgical extraction of emerging hell. The shards of ice feel a force of vigor, the looming fear releases growing bigger and bigger, until a demon's fingers linger toward the shadow of death. An all-consuming hush, the land goes swept. The night washes up, frozen on the ice. Dread arbors thaw her out in the green sun's light. An expedition map suddenly unfurls, revealing Merit Lage has rearranged the world.